We'll start with roll call and introductions. I'm Sarah Fox, and we'll go around to my right.
Alex Gall.
Andy Gregg.
Robert Hines.
Michelle Kapitanovich.
Mark Person, City of Vancouver.
Sharon Lumont-Tobin, Clark County.
Jenna Kay, Clark County.
Mark Manley, Commissioner.
Sean Denniston, Commissioner.
All right, let's take a look at our meeting minutes and propose any revisions. We actually have two minutes on our agenda tonight. The reason November 7th are on there is because staff needed to add a valuation to the minutes. So that's the only thing that was being changed, aside from the changes we'd already approved in December. And then we'll also, so we'll have two separate motions. Let's do November 7th first. Did you send November 7th out to everyone? You did, didn't you?
It's on the website.
Okay.
Yeah, you did.
So if everyone's had a chance to look at those. So when you're ready, I'll...
Just to clarify, the only change we made was on page 4. We added the total rehabilitation cost total.
Mm-hmm. So I'm ready to entertain a motion whenever you're ready.
I move we approve the November 7, 2018 minutes.
Second.
All right. Seconded by Andy. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Minutes have been approved. So let's take a look at December 5th meeting minutes. Is everyone?
Hey, I have a minor amendment. It's on the last page. It's on page 5, last paragraph. And it says that Gregg and Kapitanovich are not interested. I was wondering if, at least speaking for myself, if we could put, I'm unable to attend.
I second that. Good job.
All right. Any other changes?
I was not present at that meeting, so I'll abstain.
Any other changes?
So I'll move to approve. All right. The December 5th minutes.
Second.
Okay. Second by Rock. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And one abstention. All right. All right. Our next item on the agenda is the Vancouver Heritage Overlay Review for the Academy Building, House of Providence. We'll start with staff.
Thank you, Chair Fox. This is for the Providence Academy at 400 East Evergreen Boulevard, which I believe the Commission is fairly familiar with. Because it's in the Heritage Overlay District and there are improvements visible from the street, we need the applicant to go through the Heritage Review and also Design Review, so we're here tonight. Staff is here tonight asking for advisory input on these improvements to incorporate in the design review. And I think I will actually kick it over to the applicant to further describe the HVAC improvements.
Do we have any questions first for staff? Done? Okay. All right, thank you. You can
from outside of Indianapolis.
in large part because of the tremendous mission that the Historic Trust fulfills with regard to preservation and education and celebration. And one of the tremendous projects that is before you for your input and recommendation is the Providence Academy, which is, in my mind, a really stunning tribute of the phenomenal work of an incredibly courageous leader, Mother Joseph. And for all of us who have learned and read about Mother Joseph and her story and the tremendous work that she did with regard to touching the lives of so many individuals, while at the same time being this incredible visionary, a construction manager, an architect, a designer, and someone who was so successful in raising money for her incredible mission work, there's just no finer human being. And I'm just incredibly honored to be able to work with my colleague, our Director of Historic Preservation, Holly Chamberlain, and our consultant, Jessica Engman, in the work that we are doing in partnership, I think, with the community and the county to restore and to preserve this great treasure here in the Pacific Northwest. I've got business cards that I'm going to leave here for all of you, and I very much look forward to getting to know each and every one of you and to be your partner in uplifting this region. And at that, I'm going to turn it over to Jessica, who will walk us through the work that's we seek to go forth here. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Commissioners. Jessica Engman. I'm a historic preservation consultant, and I am the project manager on these improvements. And I'm going to be walking you through the packet, which is essentially also the images that will be up on the screen that I'm speaking to. We have three main scopes of work. So this is mostly focused on mechanical and electrical upgrades in terms of the scope that is on the exterior that you are here to comment on this evening. And these feed into a larger scope of preservation and renovation work that's occurring on the interior as the Trust makes this first phase towards making some improvements at the Academy. So on this second page here, this just orients you with a site plan that shows the major areas of work. So we're going to be talking about heat pump location, transformer location, and some louvers that are required for mechanical that will be on the building. And we provided a couple overall shots that give you views of the areas where we will be working. I first want to talk about the heat pumps. So right now, the building has a pretty antiquated mechanical system that's insufficient for heating and cooling the ballroom and the chapel to the significant larger gathering spaces. So a focus of the money and the effort here is to make those spaces more comfortable and more usable, hence the mechanical upgrade. So we have a great location to sort of tuck away those units and keep them as minimally visible as possible in this niche area that is over on the sort of northwest side of the property, tucked in between the north tower and the main and the courtyard addition, the one-story addition. So we have those units that are marked on the plan, heat pump one, heat pump two, and three, again, pretty discreet and tucked away in that little niche there. Those are freestanding units that are mounted on a concrete pad. Next, we can turn our attention to the transformer. So in order to provide these mechanical upgrades, the very antiquated electrical service also must be upgraded in order to make those mechanical improvements possible. We already have two existing transformers that I think were probably marked on that second page. Are they? Oh, it's sort of difficult to discern. It's just to the left of the heart there. So it's on that south elevation of the building. between the main entrance and that western edge. Right now, they're not very visible because the El Presidente restaurant sort of screens them from the street. But as you know, because you've approved it, that restaurant is coming down soon, and I actually now see on this blown-up site plan, they're also visible on kind of the right or right-hand side, the ETP on that upper site plan there. So when I originally submitted this, we were contemplating two locations, and we had a preferred location that was fairly close to the restaurant building, and we were asking for approval essentially to give us the flexibility to go with either of those locations. It is now appearing that we will not have the restaurant building will not be deconstructed in a time frame that coincides with when we need to install that transformer. So we are asking for approval of only that upper left-hand location now. We feel that both of these were great locations. They do need to stay on the south side of the building because the electrical room is on the south side of the basement. And the trenching line comes right off of Evergreen, goes straight up through this parking lot just west of the restaurant, and will hit straight into that transformer, and then we'll cut across and go into the basement electrical room. The transformer is planned to be screened with landscaping as part of the overall site improvements that will be occurring there. So, on to the sort of the last scope, which is the addition of some louvers, which are necessary for the function of the new mechanical system. And I'm going to start with talking about what's happening at the basement. So this first floor plan that you're looking at is HR-05 on the lower right-hand side. This is a basement floor plan. And you can see three locations where louvers are planned. I'm going to sort of flip back and forth to some of these mocked up or rendered images. So if you're looking at your packet on HR-08, we can see where exactly those are on that north elevation, and they're fairly concealed. Those louvers are behind lattice and behind the existing steps. So again, that's two basement windows that would receive louvers. The window sashes would be removed and put in storage. They would be labeled. They would not be thrown away. If ever decades down the line, this condition was reversed, those wood windows could be put back. And then likewise on the south elevation, we have one location that is shown in a photograph, R-9. Where a window would become a louver, and that will be screened further with landscaping to not be as visible in the future. So next, we'll turn our attention to what's happening on the first floor level. And here I'm going to be speaking to the removal of two residential-style window shaker AC units that are currently installed into wood transom panels on the north and south elevations. This is what currently provides cooling to the ballroom. And the plan is to remove those AC units and replace those wood transom panels in kind, essentially. And those are shown also in that HR-08 and HR-09 photo mock-up. And then one louver condition that will be coming up on the backside of the building on that north restroom tower. There is a transom over a double casement window that will be, again, the transom sash will be removed and a louver will be put in its place. This is to give ventilation, very much needed ventilation, to a restroom there. And then last louver locations, these are related to the mechanical that's required for the chapel. Are shown on the roof plan. Let me get to that sheet. And that was HR-07. Oh, I got a little ahead of myself here. And we have three of those small dormers. These are on the back side of the building, so not facing the primary elevation and the primary views. These small dormers would be replaced with louvers, and you can see those three locations, one that faces east and two that face north. So on the very last page, I have a cut sheet for the louver system and then a color chart here. We are still in the process of trying to find the very best color. The way it was mocked up in the drawings shown the louvers being painted to match the sashes. We are strongly considering actually going with possibly this taupe 52 color. We've got a sample on order, and we would like to sort of field verify that that appears to be the correct color. It's a color that closely mimics the color of the glass. It also closely mimics the color of the stone for those basement window openings that are at that lower level. And because the louvers will be placed in the window opening near the glass line and not at the front of the building, our feeling is that having a color that sort of goes away and more mimics glass may be more appropriate. We would like the flexibility to either choose a color similar to glass or a custom painted color to match the window sash if possible. We're certainly open to your feedback on that. And if I have confused you or if I've left anything out and you have questions, I think I'm ready to take those, unless Holly, you can think of anything you want to jump in right away and speak to. Okay. All right.
I have one question.
Yes.
I can't quite figure out where the transformer location is. I'm trying to sort of.
I may also point to it up on the screen. So I have X'd out the. Here we go. So this is where the two transformers are currently, and those eventually will be going away. So we were looking at this location and this location for the new transformer that would serve the building. This one does not work because the restaurant building is not scheduled to come down within the time frame that we need to install this transformer to finish the renovations in the academy. So we are looking at this location, again, both for construction feasibility as well as getting that transformer as far away from the main entry, from the heart, easily able to screen it there. And we think that provides an optimal view situation for the main facade.
What sort of landscaping are you proposing?
We don't have a landscape plan yet with any plants specified. Clark Public Utilities may require that one side remain accessible, but it would be shrubs and, taller shrubs that would essentially, you know, cover at least three sides with lower plantings in front of that.
I'm struggling with the same thing and trying to picture how this will relate to other proposed developments on the site, such as the building is called, it's moved to the west.
Right.
Sure, I can try to answer that for you. So the proposed location is directly at the southwest corner of the academy. If you can see that space above where the little rectangle is for the transformer, there will continue to be a pathway there, just as there is now. Well, it's more of a roadway, but it'll be more of a pathway when things are done. And that's essentially at the eastern edge of the roadway that leads into what is now parking for the academy, and you see above it the west end of the building, which is you've already reviewed for the north porches. So this is on historic trust property across the street, in essence, from where the new development will be. Did that make sense?
You said you
Okay.
But it made sense. I would need to see a drawing.
But yeah, by chance, do you have the site plan?
Let me just take a look.
Just imagine you're having dinner at the El Presidente, and you're seated by.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was the Academy building footprint, and so I didn't realize that was just the El Presidente building.
Yeah. This is as if you are looking at the north side of the building, and I do not have a copy of the new development plan with me. But if, yeah, Jessica, if you can sort of go to the left of where El Presidente is, that's the current street that's going north-south there. The new development will be to the west of there, and so that will be a street. The new transformer will be on the east side of what is a roadway but not officially a street right now. The landscaping is still conceptual for the Academy site. There is no overall landscaping plan as of yet. The main concern, in a sense, is to preserve the historic Sacred Heart Garden and as many of the existing trees and everything as possible. However, it's all conceptual right now as to where exactly trees, shrubs, et cetera, will go. But the historic garden will remain.
I pulled up the
good.
Past trip.
Thank you. Thank you.
Maybe just on the basis of, you know, common sense and good design will apply when you do the final location of that and you'll make it work out. It seems like a good spot.
It more or less disappears against the base of the building. The original site near El Presidente that we were looking at seemed to be.
I think as far as the location goes, it's a pretty good one if it has to be on that side of the building. Mm-hmm. It will create some limitations for how you design the circulation path, especially since, you know, we heard that the intention is that the Aegis project brings people to the site and then they move mm-hmm. over to the Academy. So that's right in kind of one of the primary circulation paths that people could have. So, I mean, that's just, it's going to cause some design issues down the road, especially if they want one side to be up. Nothing says welcome to the Academy like a 5 foot tall transformer. But
thank you. One thing to keep in mind is that will, in addition to being a pathway, that what is now roadway will continue to be a fire lane. So it's going to be fairly wide. You can see how it sort of runs there along the edge of the building. So in essence, the transformer will be at the south end of the roadway, and there'll still be access up above. It won't be it will only be a fire lane. It'll be primarily for pedestrian purposes.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about the actual access, but just the impact that would have
mm-hmm.
on the pedestrian.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So as far as actually local on the north side, am I understanding that it's a cost-effectiveness issue rather than a pure technical feasibility issue? Because I imagine it's got to be quite a bit more expensive, even if there is utility access on the north.
This is actually on the south side of the building. The other ones are on the north side. Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you're saying. Correct. The electrical lines run right there. Yeah.
And there aren't any on the north. Yeah. Well, trenching your whole site.
Well, if we don't have any more general questions, maybe we should go through the actual criteria.
My comments were more to the criteria and in specific the renderings of louvers 5 through 7, and I think you addressed this in your commentary. You're looking for feedback on this because currently the way it's rendered with the yellow kind of louvers looking like it's an abandoned building where the windows have been painted out, I mean, that would almost be counter to criteria number two about alteration of features that kind of characterize the property, having it look like it's a painted over window. And you already went there in terms of asking for the commission's feedback in terms of colors and things that might mitigate that. So I just wanted to comment on that. I think you're on the right track, something like the stone gray or, tape, I don't know, something that would kind of give it more of a glassy appearance from.
Because particularly on that third level, the dormers, it just, that yellow just pops compared to the other windows. So I think something darker would be better.
You know, my comment on that location of the dormer, the louvers on the dormers is, I think one thing that in the images of the louver dormer next to the window dormer, to me that draws attention to it. You've got one dormer that sits there with the window, you've got a dormer right next to it that sits there with a louver, and if they could possibly be paired so that in any one view, if you're looking at two dormers, you're seeing two dormers that look much the same versus two dormers that look a lot different from one another. That was my thought. And maybe on that north and east side is where you could take advantage of the paired dormers. And I know it probably increases duct runs if you're moving outside air to locations in the building, but it might be a way to ameliorate that issue.
So I do know that the dormers were not randomly selected, so that it's certainly been, the mechanical engineer has looked at this.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if maybe, if you're suggesting, I don't think you're suggesting you would like neighboring windows to also be removed to have louvers put in. It was only if we could re-engineer the system to take advantage of a dormer that, take advantage of pairs of dormers.
Yeah. Really, you'd potentially move one of the louvers, the one that's furthest west. But also not knowing what the mechanical engineering criteria was, it could, create too much. I mean, the deck sizes might go up to where it's an unattainable cross section of the deck to get through the spaces you need to get through, that sort of thing. So this is we're making recommendations or suggestions, and that's one recommendation is if there was a way to possibly pair those, it would take away from the visual impact.
I also wanted to just address quickly some of the color concerns and renderings. We didn't invest the maximum amount of money into creating photorealistic renderings, so they do appear, the louvers appear to be quite on the surface, but I am sympathetic to your concerns, and definitely our thoughts on color seems like it's aligned with your concerns as well.
All right, let's just run through.
So are we discussing point by point now?
I would like us to discuss point by point, and then so we just kind of get ourselves on track and try to stay on schedule as best we can tonight.
So I do have a comment.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to just skip, I think, number one. Let's start with one. How about that? Just take a look at that. So a property shall be used for its historic purpose or be placed in a new use that requires minimal change to the defining characteristics of the building and its site and environment. And there's no change in use was the applicant's response, which I think we can all agree with, correct? Right, it's no change in use. Okay, so moving to number two, the historic character of a property shall be retained and preserved. The removal of historic materials or alteration of features and spaces that characterize a property shall be avoided. And so moving to two, all right.
So my comments are on two, and it is with those dormers, because those dormers are really part of how the whole facade reads. And so removing the glass and changing it to a louver, it does really impact the way. So I'm glad to hear that you're thinking about, if we do go this route, maybe not going the trim color. And I think that I would encourage you strongly that if this is the path that you take, that trying to maintain the way that the facade reads as a whole, and that can be done to a certain extent by coloration, by recessing the louver like you talked about. Because as it is, I mean, it doesn't have a huge, tremendous impact on the facade, but it has a very notable impact on the facade. And I think that taking those steps to impact that, to ameliorate that, would make a big difference. On the MDO panels, so you said that the budget doesn't allow it. What is the incremental cost from going from MDO to a window?
Restored transom?
Yeah.
Probably adding, I'm not sure. It wasn't fully priced. It was just we had a list of goals, and doing that kind of window restoration wasn't, we had to pick and choose.
Mm-hmm. Well, because, you know, small windows like that with the simple kind of wood trim details that the Academy has, it may not be that expensive. And when you think of what is already being invested in doing frames for the MDO, and then the MDO, and then painting it, the incremental cost of actually restoring the glass, this is an opportunity to go beyond. I think it's at least worth looking at, especially since, you know, a system like this, you know, we're talking a project, I won't be uncouth and ask you what the budget is, but I know what a system like that goes for out there, and a window recreation could be a few hundred to a few thousand dollars. So it could be a drop in the bucket of this total budget. And so I think it's at least worth exploring.
All right, do we have any more comments on two? All right. So number three, each property shall be recognized as a physical record of its time, place, and use. Changes that create a false sense of historical development, such as adding conjectural features or architectural elements from other buildings, shall not be undertaken. The staff's report says that the standard's met because it doesn't involve making changes such as those. Do we have any other thoughts on that?
I do, and it's okay. Coming back to the louvers, because mm-hmm. you only have to look at the Academy to see that louver dormers are a thing. You know, they're something that we've historically had in buildings, and so to replace some of your windows with louvers, that does create a shift in, you know, what you are presenting as historical. And unfortunately, we kind of have cross purposes with number two here, because the better you integrate it, the more it looks like it's original. So I think that as I'm looking at the elevations, you know, we've got louvers and dormers that are right above soffits on balconies. Was that considered as an alternate location for intake or exhaust? I have no idea which these louvers are for, because it's out of sight from just about everybody's line of sight. I have no idea what the attic, whether you'd be able to get what you need through there.
When you say soffits on balconies, could you help?
So if you look at HR 11, and this isn't going to be a solution for all of them, but that dormer is right above a balcony that has a soffit mm-hmm. ceiling. And so from the looks of it here, you could go down instead of out, and you could have your air intake or exhaust there instead. I don't know what's going on in there. I've never been in your attic. But that's a location that might give you the opportunity to just avoid the whole issue. You know, I think that there's, you know, similar issue with the ground level ones. The ones that are behind the lattice, they're behind the lattice, you can't see them. But the other ones, you know, it kind of creates the look of a ventilated basement, which again, historically was a thing sometimes. It wasn't very common. And actually, I think the last one that I want to say about that, it's a mechanical design engineer or a mechanical contractor who designed it?
Design build, right, so mechanical concrete.
Okay, because ground level air intake is generally considered bad practice for indoor air quality. And we're not the mechanical review board, but I understand that the reason that you're doing this is to make this space more vital so that it can better support the building. And if that's an intake there, I swung by today, and that whole area smells musty. So you'd be pulling in musty air and blowing musty air into your spaces all the time, which is kind of counterproductive. So, you know, this is one of those times, mechanical contractors, design build, they're not known for good design. they're known for expediency, and it's often their expediency. And so I think going with an actual design engineer where you can lay out your needs and the criteria, and they know more solutions and have a higher level of sophistication, you might get a better solution. Because this approach, I mean, the solution has a lot of issues with it, and maybe a better designer could solve those better for you.
Appreciate the thoughts. We've gone through many iterations to get to what we thought was something that would be historically acceptable. So this certainly wasn't the first one we landed on. But.
Okay. All right. Do you have any other thoughts or additions? We're kind of running short, so we're going to speed through if we're trying to stay on time tonight.
I had one. Okay. Sorry to go backwards, but on two, I'll make it really brief. The heat pump location, when we were reviewing the, what was the Aegis development, thank you. One of the things we looked at was the view corridor that they were required to maintain, that essentially looked at that little courtyard where those heat pumps will go. So my only thought was, I think that is probably the logical spot for them, but screening,
mm-hmm.
That's all.
Okay, right.
Of some kind.
All right. So number four, most properties change over time. Those changes that have acquired historic significance in their own right shall be retained and preserved. Staff agrees that the standard is met. Now, remember that we are just a recommending body, but if we have some comments on this item. Okay. No. Number five, distinctive features, finishes, and construction techniques or examples of craftsmanship that characterize a historic property shall be preserved. We've talked a bit about that. Any other additional thoughts? Okay. Six, deteriorated historic features shall be repaired rather than replaced. Do you have any thoughts on that? This is a project about upgrading.
I think this I think that applies to the MDO panels as well.
Mm-hmm. Versus replacing with the window.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Number seven, chemical or physical treatments such as sandblasting that cause damage to historic materials shall not be used. They're not talking about this sort of work on this project, unless I'm wrong, you know. Number eight, significant archaeological resources affected by a project shall be protected and preserved. We do know that they are planning to save the windows and other features for later reuse. Any other thoughts?
How much trenching is going to occur as a result of this?
There will be trenching from the street. Holly, do you have any you want to add on the archaeology, sort of what our plan is if anything's discovered?
Sure. The trenching will basically run from Evergreen up to the proposed location for the transformer. It'll be right along the western edge of El Presidente. Right now, we've received approval from DAP for the archaeology monitoring for the deconstruction of the building, and that essentially includes the area where we'll be trenching. So it's all covered, and both projects will be monitored during, I mean, the deconstruction and the trenching.
Okay.
You might find something from the old tennis courts.
Number nine is new additions This is exactly all that we're discussing on this project. But new additions, exterior alterations, or related new construction shall not destroy historic materials that characterize the property. The new work shall be differentiated from the old and shall be compatible with the massing, size, scale, and architectural features to protect the historic integrity of the property and its environment.
So I had one concern. I think that it fits here. Mm-hmm. I agree that location and the need is probably the best place for those, for the compressors, for the outdoor units. But those outdoor units, they kind of create a vortex. And we've seen units like that kick up dust and effectively sandblast the brick around them. And then once the vitrified layer of brick is lost, then it opens the possibility for rapid deterioration. I was going to bring a picture. I even had one. So I'm wondering if there's any plans to help, make sure that happens. I noticed the location is very close to the wall, and I understand why that is, but that's more likely to make it happen.
Minimizing the amount of dirt back there could be...
So we actually went through the same thing with the Carnegie Library. They installed a very similar piece of equipment along the side of that building. And to mitigate that effect, they increased the... Well, they were supposed to. They're not very happy with that contractor. Design-build, terrible design. We've gone through this recently. So increasing the size of the pad... helps reduce the amount of dirt and grime that's around there that can be kicked up. These exhaust out the top, and that helps a lot, but this one that exhausts out the side, those are the worst culprits. And so just making sure that it's not pointed at the brick whenever it gets installed. But it's not far from any kind of thing that breaks that position. It's just something to keep in mind to protect the building.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts? Anything we haven't covered on this item? Great. We'll move on to number 10. New additions and adjacent or related new construction shall be undertaken in such a manner that if removed in the future, the essential form and integrity of the historic property and its environment would be unimpaired. And the only new items are the HVAC systems. So, all right. Sounds like we've given you a lot of feedback on the project. I'd summarize a bit, and I could be corrected as well, that we're more in favor of something other than that the color that's shown in your renderings, to be more glass-like. And also, it sounds like most of us would agree that if possible, to replace the glass instead of the MDF panel would be appropriate. But, any other summaries, items, that takeaways? That I missed.
I think just to push back on the HVAC design and see if there is something better than that. Even if it means going to a mechanical designer instead of a design build.
Well, thank you very much for bringing this to us and doing good work on the diagrams and mapping and photo renderings. So thank you.
Yeah, I do want to say thank you very much. The information made it a lot easier to give feedback. I so appreciate that. And also, your choice of equipment is good. Daikin makes very good stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have the Vancouver Heritage Overlay Review for the Evergreen Inn for the window replacement. We'll start with staff.
Stick with the windows.
It's just a window night.
So this is something that came before, again, this is a similar situation. Let me go back. This is the Evergreen building, Evergreen Inn at 500 Main Street in Heritage Overlay number 2. And exterior alterations are subject to review, advisory review by the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission. I've written a short memo here, but I've also just also attached John Wagner's memo from 2013, and I understand this went before this commission basically a year ago as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe Jamie from the Evergreen Inn has some updated information with us that she would like to share. and get the commission's feedback.
Do we have any initial comments for staff or questions?
I should probably state that at our former chair's badgering, I went on site and talked to staff there about this project.
Okay.
Just wanted to note that.
For the record, I don't feel like I badgered you. I think you were very passionate about the project, Sean, and I thought...
Encouraging suggestion.
I thought maybe a little bit of community outreach would be good on your part.
I guess we'll have the opportunity to find out if he was helpful. All right. Would you like to come forward and... Yeah. We're ready for you. It looks like that mic's dead.
Okay, I think that's on. So thanks for meeting with us again. I came and talked with the committee, I don't know, sometime 2018. It took some time to kind of pull some information together, and life at the Evergreen Inn has kind of pulled me away in different directions through the year. So I know this more prolonged than we would have liked. Plus, it took a while to get bids in and talk with owners and all of that to kind of see what direction that was the best for us as a business to go, and then bring it back to you guys. So we had been previously asked, or I believe Jackie Camp had mentioned before about us going back and looking at federal funding as a possible option. We went and did that. There was two different options. Both of those options are actually not an option because of the cost involved. The one specific one that would be the closest that we could potentially hit would be, it has to be 25% of our property value. Our property value is currently sitting at almost $4 million. So that would mean that I would have to have a project of $1 million in order for that assistance. So we're not there, so that's not really an option. We did get bids on restoration, and with talking with our owners, we would like to move forward with replacement of windows. With given the amount of time that it would take for a restoration to happen, and thank you, Sean, for coming down. He spent a couple of hours with us, and I'm sorry you were badgered, but we did appreciate it and getting feedback. So we did definitely take that under consideration. He said badgered, Robert. I didn't say you badgered him. I had no idea.
I wasn't badger. I was encouraged.
He gracefully called and came down. And we did spend, I think we spent like 3 hours kind of browsing through the building, or at least it was a bit of time. He had to meet with them, so I got to meet him. But yeah, so just kind of looking at the reality of the amount of time it's going to take for a restoration to happen, the benefits of having the double pane glass. My owners would like to do a replacement. So I brought Jeff with me from All Seasons Windows. He has brought a sample with him for you guys to look at. The window sample is white. However, we are looking at doing a forest green color. Jeff has a sample color of that. So it will blend in nicely to what we currently have going. Again, in the last meeting that I was with, I think maybe Sarah had mentioned about, you know, we're looking at doing windows that are on the second floor, second, third, fourth, and fifth floors. So you're not gonna be like real up close and personal and really be able to tell the difference of the materials. So going from the wood to a vinyl. What else can I tell you guys? Other questions that you guys had for us was storage. I don't have storage of the old windows. Somebody is welcome to them if they have a project or want them. I don't have storage, and I don't have the funds to be able to provide for a storage unit.
So what's the plan with the first floor windows then? You said
there is no.
Just you're just gonna.
So the real problems are upstairs in resident rooms.
The first floor, oh. If I remember, they were replaced in the 80s or
probably
something.
87.
They're aluminum.
No plans to do anything
No plans to do anything with the historical original Evergreen Hotel. I would like to replace on the build that was done in 1987. I have four resident room windows that are on the first floor, ground level, that, and I think I may have photos for you. Sorry, I didn't bring a big PowerPoint for you guys, but those windows don't allow them to open them. They open vertically, so that if I want to open up my window, it's huge. It's like, 6 feet tall? So if I open up my bedroom window, it's 6 feet tall, so somebody could literally just step right into my room, which isn't a super safety thing. So just those four windows, we would like to change those, but not the historical part of the building, and leave all of the storefronts exactly as is. And then these particular windows, the new windows, would blend in with, of course, what we're doing second, third, fourth, and fifth floors. What other questions or any questions that you guys have for?
Would you like to pass around the samples?
Sure. Okay. We might. Yeah, we can pass around. I brought my brochure too. We'll send mine this way. You send that one that way. And then he has a big window sample he can set up.
Are these windows, do they have to be custom made, or are they fitting into the?
They're custom.
Custom.
Mm-hmm. They'll have to be custom.
Yeah. So there's no alteration to the.
No alterations. The window currently has a grid in it. The new window's going to have a grid. And I've only got maybe six, I think, that have grids in them. But otherwise, they're just kind of a standard square, open and close. The other thing with these particular windows is that they are going to be double hung, so that we can clean them. So our windows are going to look nicer and crisper, instead of kind of, the way that they do now. Also, it's going to hold our screens in, which is going to be beneficial to the health of our residents. One of the things that we have a challenge with every year when we have our state survey is having windows or having screens in our windows. We risk our violation of that ventilation WAC every year. And it also, we've had screens fall out. So if we're having a screen fall from second to fifth floor, that poses a bit of a danger for those walking by on the street. So that's the other benefit of going with the newer window compared to, repairing the old ones.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like the product has some options on the profile of the grid.
And then also, if you look at, if you pull that brochure, there's actually two brochures there. You'll see that has, initially when it looks like it was presented, there wasn't really an option for forest green exterior. And so this has that forest green exterior, which will match it exactly to what it currently has. But yeah, there's also grid options as far as sizes you can go with.
So you'll be able to dial in pretty close on.
Oh, yeah, this window is specifically designed for a wood retrofit replacement. So it's a 3.25-inch frame jam, which is exactly what you need.
On our grids, too, they're all located on the sixth floor.
Fifth floor.
Or the fifth floor. So yeah, you'll be
way up.
Just see the grids in there.
Is that trim always been green?
Since I've worked there for over 24 years, it's always been green.
And there's a green just going around. The lighting's a little bit different in here, but
so we spent quite a bit of time kind of wandering around, putting it up, stepping back, all of that kind of thing to look at the best product, the best match.
Just out of curiosity, what did you get an estimate on restoration?
I did. Restoration, one bid average window wise, was over $2,000. For the restoration, and then of course we have to have it pulled out, and the window has to be, it has to be taken someplace else. So it's just, there's no other light source. In fact, we don't even have light fixtures in the room. We have to put, have lamps for people in our rooms, unfortunately. So I think it'd be pretty hard for, some of our residents who do have a lot of depression issues, to not have any natural light for a prolonged period of time.
Well, I just want to say thank you for going through all the effort. I think you first came to the commission, what, 7-8 years ago? You've been through Sarah and I's entire two terms on the commission now. And I think first, you know, Andy was the chair back then, so he's been through three chairs. So thank you. I mean, as you can tell, we're really passionate about historic preservation on this commission. But I just want to say personally, as a commissioner, thank you for taking all our feedback. I think a lot of people come before us and don't really take that to heart. And you obviously have, and I can tell you've done your homework, and you've had the sage consultation from our own expert, Sean Denniston, to fall back on. So, I mean, my own opinion is that good work and good luck with the project at this point.
Thank you.
Do we get to see the window sample?
Do you want to see it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he's getting that out. What is the warranty on this product?
On commercial, it's a 10-year, but the reality is we give this a lifetime on residential. It's double-strength glass, double pane. I don't know if I should just, like, when you guys...
Yeah, just put it right up here.
I think the question on process would be, or we don't have the same, you know, criteria laid out like we did with the last proposal.
So. Kind of window seals have a.
So first off, the majority of what you're gonna, the exterior is really one of the big things. This is actually, it's not your standard typical vinyl windows to step up. It has more of an exterior, a traditional exterior look to it. So it's minor corner construction. It has more of an overlap butt joint. Lowly argon, so it's going to be a lot more energy efficient. These come with a 0.27 U value. These are also designed, as she was talking about on the upper levels, these are designed to tilt in the house or the facility for easy cleaning. Okay, so they can wash and clean. The big thing for you guys is the exterior overlap butt joint construction, which is a lot more traditional as far as older historical buildings. We've put these in other historical buildings like in Portland.
What's the SHGC on it?
Say what?
The SHGC.
The SHGC is a good question. I'd have to get back to that.
So you've got a lot of south-facing windows. If you're going through the trouble of replacing the windows and getting a good... SHGC is the... the shading coefficient. It's
that. Coefficient.
Yeah. So...
The solar coefficient on this is a... I think it's a 3.0.
So that's good. Is also pretty decent these days.
Yeah, really good. Standard, I think, is about 3.2. Any questions on this?
No.
This also has a 3-inch fence up, which allows ventilation for the residents of 3 inches without being able to open it all the way. As far as the exterior is concerned, that's probably going to be the big thing as far as the look of it. So if this is a completely in-forest green, it's going to look nice and dark. And then it is a 3.25-inch frame gem, so the inside stop and the outside stop is identical to what is currently in there. So we yank out the old sash, we remove the center stop, and then the new retrofit goes right in that opening.
Just no nail plans, just stop in.
Yeah, we'll insulate the cavities. You got cavities with the old counterweight balance
right.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Those all get insulated, and then the new retrofit will go right in that exact opening.
Okay.
How many of those do you anticipate needing additional?
The building needs 150 windows altogether.
Yeah, in terms of like the, you know, the integrity of the wood and the frame that you're putting it in. Is
you have a lot of rotten sills there too, so we're going to fix all those as well.
Yeah.
We're getting that really bad.
Yeah.
And that's all included in the plan.
Part of the program is to
replace in kind the sill.
The sill that's worn out.
All the trims and preserve that original look.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think my only concern is the vinyl. You know, the gaskets on double hung vinyl windows are notorious for failing, which leaves you at basically single pane performance. Within the energy efficiency field, which is actually where my job is, we consider the service life at full efficiency of a vinyl window to be 5 years. And that it deteriorates after that, and the general service life of vinyl window is 15 to 20 years. So there are other materials out there that have a lot better of a longevity profile on them. You know, the restoring the windows that you have now will give you about another 100 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, replacing them, and I totally understand why you feel the need to do that, but if you choose this material, you may find yourself in 20 years doing the exact same thing, and then in 20 years doing the exact same thing, and you find that what you save today is going to cost the building, you know, more long term. So, you know, looking at those metal, looking at fiberglass, which is, you know, that gives you a lot of opportunity of matching the wood profile even more. Even looking at cellular vinyl as opposed to framed vinyl, which is what this is. So I'm looking at that, and the welds on the corner of those are not good. I mean, you know, I know that you're the you're the rep, but
no. I'm actually one of the owners, and we rep Mill Garden, we rep Simonton, we rep Allside, we rep aluminum. We've done banks, we did the Palby Reservoir. So this window, the step up and put it with 270 value. I mean, we put a double lifetime warranty on it. So on a residential.
Well, that's actually a really good detail. I'm happy to see that because facing south, glass and vinyl have incredibly different coefficients of expansion
right.
under heat. So to see that, that's a really good thing. The feature set on these windows, I think, is spot on. You know, it's just the material is my only concern.
I know, like, you know, we want to keep the integrity of the building. I also have to be able to do, you know, budget, you know.
And this certainly seems like a better one. But
I feel. The window and the glass that I have in there now, this where if somebody fell into it, they're not going to go out the window.
Mm-hmm.
So just looking at the overall balance of things, this is what we're asking for approval for.
Well, we don't have to approve it. We just give feedback.
20 years, then hey, you get an opportunity.
In 20 years, we'll get another shot at it. I would say, though, when it comes to the old ones that you're removing, mm-hmm. You know, I would reach out to the Historical Museum. I would reach out to the National Park Service. I would reach out to the Historic Trust, who someone is in the room right here.
Yeah.
They may be interested in taking the materials. They might be able to use them. They might be able to store them. You know, I would definitely don't just trash it. Put the word out because, you know, glass, some of that glass is probably original. Some of it's probably been replaced.
The ones from 1987 that are the cheaper pines, we're going to turn them. But we will definitely open it up and make some contacts and see if people want them.
I think that's
forums and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over in Portland, there's the Architectural Heritage Center, too. They might really be interested in them, possibly, too.
We have like a straight up architectural salvage place around here, like a true one.
It's the
Habitat for Humanity will.
Yeah, if nothing else, Habitat for Humanity in a Connecticut.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, there are options to at least make sure that what you do take out might have a life somewhere else and help out another building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
course, DAHP up in Olympia, the State Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, they might have some good ideas as far as repurposing and salvage.
We are looking at kind of doing this as, like, we're not going to come in and I can't afford to come in and do 150 windows at once, so we're looking at doing it probably in three steps. And so, you know, kind of breaking it up into more manageable costs and whatnot. So.
And the salvage might save you a little bit of money since you wouldn't have to pay for disposal.
That's right. Yeah. No, we'll try to repurpose things and not just throw stuff in the landfill, absolutely.
Well, it sounds like everyone has given their thoughts and opinions on this project and that we are supportive. So thank you for bringing it forward to us, like we said, for all these different tries, and it looks like you've got a good project ahead of you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Great. You can definitely stay for the budget. That's our next item. You can stay for our budget.
Next budget. One.
Or you can
pretty
leave.
Good budget.
Yes.
Pretty patient, too, actually.
You know, not to make you feel obligated, but all right. Next item, our budget.
Mm-hmm. Last year, you awarded them $1,500. Kind of have those two scenarios. We currently have $3,184 in the budget. If you allocate $2,000, you'll have $1,184. I know that Jan Bader is going to come back with a request for funds for to write the nomination for the CCHR for the old cemetery, and she needs about $1,500 to $2,000 for that. She said she can leverage. So if she can get 1,184 remaining, she can leverage that. If you go with the $1,500 to the Historic Museum, you'll have 1,684 left. She can add on to the top of either one of those numbers. So it's whatever you want to do, 1,500 or 2,000.
I don't remember the old cemetery project. What, you mean at the Poor Farm or somewhere
else?
No,
it's an old cemetery. Where is the old cemetery?
Sorry, it's off Mill Plain.
Mill Plain or Fourth Plain? There's a couple off of Mill Plain, one by Grand Avenue and one up the Mill Plain. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
This is not the one by the Heights. This is the one closer in.
By Grand Avenue.
And Jan will talk more about it.
Oh, okay. Well,
she needs some funding for that.
Well, and we also sidelined some of those. The signage projects, too, that we were hoping that we'd have some funds left over to do those.
That wasn't from the city's budget. That's from the county's budget, and we won't know if we can access those funds until the supplemental budget. That was never part of the city's budget. The interpreter panels?
Right, yeah.
That would have come from the county.
The numbers that you just gave us, you're saying, were the portion of our budget that the City of Vancouver provides?
Yes, this is the City of Vancouver's budget. So there's 3,184 left in it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the question posed to you is, how much do you want to fund for the CCHM speaker series?
And that has to come out of the city budget?
Out of this 3,184.
Okay.
This is a two-year budget, so if you don't spend it, it rolls.
I think we've done less than 2,000 in the past, right? He comes and right. Right.
It's interesting because it's the Clark County Historical Museum, and yet is Clark County not allowed to help finance that? I guess what I'm getting at is, could we use some of the city money and some of the county money for the speaker series?
We did not get our county portion of our historic budget approved. The funding request that we had for, was it $10,000?
Mm-hmm.
The amount hasn't been approved yet.
I see.
Because we're in budget crunch, we may get it approved. So all we have is the city budget right now.
Then should we be more conservative with the funds until We know what.
Well, the only thing that we were going to do with the county budget is we take 2,000 out of that 10 for our mobile app, and then the 8,000 we were going to use towards one or two interpretive panels, either for Center or Ridgefield, where we talked about that, or Camas. Mm-hmm. That's on hold. We don't have those funds. We didn't allocate anything else in that budget, just those panels.
Well, usually we sponsor other groups too, and so I'm just wondering.
We've done that.
Yeah.
The budget's already, the museum sponsorships are done. This is your mm-hmm. last tranche of funds, 3,184.
Sharon, do you have any insights into how much commission budgets are getting cut? I mean, is it looking like we're going to get...
Our budget is earmarked. They can't really spend it for anything else, so we're hoping that we get access to it because it can't be used for anything else.
Right, okay.
We're hoping that they'll release it, but they might not. They might just leave it in there. Mm. And then you would have it accumulating for next year, but...
Mm. Well, I really do appreciate our partnership with the museum and these speaker series, and also having us, inviting us to speak before each of those events, I think really has widened the amount of people that know about us and the work that we do, which has been really great. So definitely am advocating for, you know, some budgets being allocated to them. I'm just not sure if $2,000, like you said, a little worried about some of these other things that we wanted to do. I mean, do we have any idea of when we're going to have, is it next month, or what is the budget?
I think it's in the spring. I think it's May or June.
Oh, so it's quite a ways out. Oh, okay.
And if we decided on an amount that was less than 2,000, we decided later in the year to allocate more, or?
Yes, because you'll be incrementally deciding this, so you'll decide next will be the old cemetery, and then if there's anything left, you'd come back around and mm-hmm. allocate more.
So, Sharon, this 3184 is what we have left for calendar year 2019. Do we foresee additional requests after the old cemetery project that Jan's working on?
Not at this point.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Seems like we have two askers on the table.
So I guess I should formally recuse myself from any discussion of the museum since I serve on their board, just for the record.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we can discuss the other stuff.
And Jan thinks she needs 1,500.
She 1,500 to 2,000, and she can leverage the rest of the funding. She said, "Whatever you," she said, "go ahead and do your museum allocation. Whatever's left, she will leverage."
And how much is did the museum get last year?
1,500.
They requested 2,000, and you granted 1,500.
I think we typically go under what
they ask.
We have enough money to give either of them about 1,600, mm-hmm. and so that would be an increase. If we gave the museum 1,600, that would be an increase more than anybody else gets. I mean, that's a pretty good bump, and also that would help Jan's project.
Sounds like we have
a compromise.
$1,500, we'd still have $184 left.
Okay. Your budget.
Well, I do know that we have some subcommittees as well that we're going to discuss in our new business, and I'm just wondering if we need to use any of that money to support any of that work.
Well, if it has more. Yeah, mm-hmm. Think about that. Other requests that might come up, because it's only February.
Mm-hmm.
Other things may come up that you want to do.
I'm almost inclined to say that we could at least guarantee $1,000 to the museum at this point until we have some assurances that we're going to have extra money that's approved. Mm-hmm.
I support that.
I like that idea.
That also seems reasonable given that we would have other opportunities to modify that decision.
I like that idea so much, I'm going to make a motion that we allocate $1,000 to the CCHM.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Abstain.
One abstention?
Vote present.
But then you can make some more decisions throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Let's make sure that we get in there in the minutes that there's the option that later in the year. That
may come back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just when we have some more certainty on our...
And they may need less because I'm April's speaker and I will forego the fee.
Thank you.
I gave you a fee? I didn't get a fee.
Got a fee simple.
All right, we have new business. And, you know, I actually had circled a date that I was on the Battleground Lions Club. I thought I'd given a date where I was like, I definitely could make it, or preferred. I think the March dates is what I was hoping if I was going to be one of the folks presenting.
Should I just summarize what that is?
Yes.
So it's the Battleground Lions Club has asked the Historic Preservation Commission for a presentation. This is kind of like what we did last year for all the cities. Mm-hmm. We just kind of update that presentation. We need 2 volunteers, and you have to agree on the dates that they have available.
I'd volunteered, and I was suggesting that for me, March, one of the March dates would be better.
Any particular March date or any?
I think March 28th was what I was thinking was the best.
What time was that at again?
It's in the evening because if dinner is included. I can find out, but I think it's, we'll find out
on my phone somewhere.
So I think the time would dictate whether or not I could do it.
Okay. I know it's evening, dinner.
Anybody else want to join me?
Or are you going to Main Street? Because that's like a day after me.
Yeah, no, I won't be going to Main Street this year.
Oh. Okay, Jackie said.
Robert's the only one from the commission.
Oh, okay. Jackie had said that you'd be going with the city of Camas, but that's not the case. Okay.
No, my job has changed, and they want me to become an expert in urban forestry this year. So I'll be going to
this year.
Yes. So I'm going to a week-long conference a few weeks before that. So.
Okay.
I'll just ask you guys to email me if you're interested in joining me on that day.
Otherwise,
just me. But you know, take a look at your calendars. Don't have to commit tonight.
Yeah, if you can find out.
Okay.
They are providing dinner, so if that is exciting to you, I'm sure it'll be great. Let's see.
I initially was interested, but I think it'd be really good if some of the newer members of the commission stepped up and got
Okay, we'll get back to you on the time, but at least for sure, Sarah.
Yeah, I thought it was later in the evening, but.
Okay, and
I'm looking at the 20th. I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure with the 28th that I was most able to go. I think I could go on the 14th, too. It just would be whatever my calendar looked like. The 28th was better.
I have one more new business item.
Okay.
So the 2020 CLG grant application window is open. They're due in April, and one of their funding priorities was registration, travel, and lodging for staff and commissioners to attend the National Alliance of Preservation Commission Forum. One that Sean attended in Des Moines last year. That's kind of a no-brainer to put that together, but I need your approval.
Where is that?
It's going to be in Tacoma. It's the first time on the West Coast.
We have a date.
It's next year.
We just know, they haven't set a date. When was it last year? It's probably the same.
Isn't it in the
early
summer?
June was last time was early June.
So early June 2020. So I'm just going to put the proposal together for like the entire commission and some staff, and if they partially fund that, we could come up with the rest of the funding from Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Just see what we get.
So yes.
If you prove that, we'll go ahead and write that.
That'd be good. I've been asked to submit a presentation. So.
Yeah.
Do you want a motion or?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Could I have a motion to approve the grant application?
So moved.
did I make the motion?
No, you just saved me the trouble of wording it.
All right, any all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
We'll just see what we get.
All right. Oh, for that one? Okay, so maybe.
No more
double check.
Item. Jackie and I are updating the rules and procedures. So last year was our code update, and now we're working on rules and procedures. And we need a subcommittee to help us review, edit. Two people, ideally, three also. The work would be done in February, and then, so it's quite intense this month, and then you present out to the commission in March, and hopefully in our March meeting we could just work right through it and approve it. If we need to carry over to April, we can do that. So it's intense this month. Mm-hmm. So you'd be working at home, compiling all your edits.
So that's what intense means, mostly on our own time.
On your own time, yeah. And then maybe there's a chair of that subcommittee who compiles everything into one, and then we'll...
Okay, we're hoping for two volunteers.
So who else? So Andy?
I'll volunteer. I just came back from Salem today doing rules and procedures.
Yeah, so Andy, Sean, two's fine, but is there a third that wants to do it?
How many meetings is it?
Well, I think it's going to be working at home. Maybe you can do this on Google Docs so you can do it in one file. Otherwise, one person's going to have to merge everybody else's into one copy. So however you want to work that out. I don't think you need to physically be in the same room. It's just kind of going through and using track changes and making comments and questions that we can then, mm-hmm. and then presenting it. And then we'll talk it through. And
all right. It sounds like we have two volunteers then. And okay. Good.
Thank you.
And
that out to you shortly. If we have to move it a month, we will. But.
Well, the idea for March, just so everyone knows, is we don't have any, at least staff has mentioned that we don't have any hearings or other projects to review in March that they know of, so we will just make it a working meeting. So, and this will be one of the items that we can work through. All right.
What day does that fall on in March?
Sixth.
We're also going to be meeting in the city of Vancouver because they're using this room for the state of the county. I'll remind you later.
Okay.
Okay. I'll be in San Jose the 4th and 5th, so I don't know on my availability, but I'll let you know.
Okay. All right. Did you want me to go ahead and do number 4?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So we have some applications out there. Hopefully some good people will want to apply to be on our committee and fill two vacancies. Who would like to be on our selection committee? Usually we have three.
This is going to be in March. Mm-hmm. It's usually two interview sessions.
We usually have two or three of us,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
We did two last year.
Yeah, I think it was just Robert and I. But
that requires two evenings.
Yeah, the time commitment is, you know, just depends on how many people are actually applying. I've done this quite a few times now and just need to review all the application materials and
fill out the criteria.
And you come to one meeting with staff and
what are the applications for? I'm sorry, I'm a little lost.
Sarah and
this is for the selection of the new
positions are vacant. Who are they?
Sarah and Robert.
Oh, for
Sarah
the
and Robert. Yeah.
Oh. And they've reached their term.
Okay. Yeah. I can help with that.
Yeah, I did it the previous year, so I'd be happy to do it.
So Rock and Michelle? Okay.
And one more.
Alex?
I can do it.
Okay.
Rock, Michelle, and Alex? Okay.
And then there will be probably one day, maybe 2 days, where you might have to be available for the interviews.
Yeah, 1 to 2 days, evenings for the interviews mm-hmm. in March. And we'll throw out dates so that we'll get on the same.
Okay. Great. Thank you, guys. And then the, did you want to talk?
Can I throw in one more? Yeah, mm-hmm. before we do this. So we had a request from Dean Irvin via Holly Chamberlain, and he is the owner of this property, which I'll pass around. He wants to inquire whether the commission would consider this as a nomination to the CCHR. It's a mid-century property. The original footprint is 2,200 square feet on the right, that brick. And the 1980s addition is about 3,000 square feet. That's like more.
Loose River?
Yes. And so he's wondering about the integrity of this building. Is it still something you would consider to put on the register? The original owner was Charles Kellogg, who Holly thinks is the founder of Northwest Copper. And there's several different varieties of metal incorporated into the architecture. The original fireplaces remain. It wouldn't be eligible for the National Register because of this massive addition, but maybe the CCHR has more relaxed standards in order to protect just the footprint of that historic structure.
How old is the structure?
How old
is this building? If it's the building I'm thinking about, I remember when it was.
I don't have an exact date on the original part of the building, but it's from the 1940s, I believe. Really? So it's within the realm of being historic. My concern was that the addition is so large, it overwhelms the original building. And I told him I was concerned about whether it would qualify or not. I knew it would not qualify for the National Register, but it depends on how you all want to interpret your own standards. And I didn't want to say no to him without checking in. He was comfortable with having you all discuss this, so I said, well, I'd bring it forward. So
I think it would depend entirely on, you know, are there these metal details that connect to a figure who was, you know, significant to the local area. I think if it all depends on that route, mm-hmm. Then this is an extraordinary example of something, you know.
Well, it does have the historic connections with the local business, and their business was metal, which is why they incorporate a lot of metal into the house. But you know, it's a view property, and times change, and so later owners put on this very large addition. Actually, the Irvin Dean and Susan didn't put the addition on themselves; they bought it that way. But as you know, he's very keen on preserving historic properties, getting them protected. So he's interested in your opinions.
It looks like on the building card, it looks like it's 1965 build date.
That was probably the addition. Yeah.
The addition?
Mm-hmm.
Because the photo that goes along with it. So there's sort of the main thing on the far right.
The brick part is the older part.
Yeah, so this is the back.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it's originally had like a carport coming off that.
I don't know the answer to that, Alex.
I'm just going off that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very hard to see from the street, which I took one photo, but you can not see the extent of it. Fortunately, the county kindly went out in a boat at some point and took photos of those properties. But but it is a very large addition, so it's a philosophical thing, you know. Is that something that outweighs other considerations, or
the addition
potentially proceed?
The size of the addition is really relevant to, you know, if it's being listed on stylistic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
If it's being listed more on historical reasons, then the size of the addition becomes less of an issue,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, it is about its association.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And did those people make those additions?
Well, no, I mean, whether or not they made the additions, but, you know, if mm-hmm. it's, yeah, that, mm-hmm. I think that's the main thing. If you can make a strong case for someone who's significant to the local history, mm-hmm. and that this, you know, the part that actually is historic is you know, strongly mm-hmm. connected to them, especially, you know, these details that you've talked about mm-hmm. that really connect this mm-hmm. particular building,
mm-hmm.
I think that you've got a strong case. I think we just have to be careful about how we designate it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Columbia. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was also mentioning that in the past when we've had some projects like this, we've just been really clear when we've made our recommendation or our decision mm-hmm. to say what we aren't considering historic, you know, as part of the
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
I would encourage him to bring it forward. I'm not sure. How do the rest of us feel?
Yeah, I think if you look at the brick building itself, which is the historic one, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's clearly differentiated from the additions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it, yeah.
Additions weren't kind
That's
of
certainly
morphed
true.
Into the building,
mm-hmm.
or made to like appear as though they were part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if that becomes the contributing feature and mm-hmm. some history behind it, the ownership and so forth, then mm-hmm. yeah, I think it would. Fair consideration for the Heritage Register.
Okay. Well, I would let him know. The closest comparison I could come up with was the Copeland Building, which is now no longer the Copeland Building, but the Greeley Building, where Gravitate is now, and Tyorkit is attached to the historic building, but it's very much subordinate to the historic portion, and that was the thinking at the time. But this was much larger, so, you know, but I'll let him know.
Well, I think there's another example. I'm trying to remember the name of it now. I just went there not too long ago. The lodge, Summit Grove Lodge, is
that's true. They've got some.
The historic building is probably less than half the square foot.
Mm-hmm.
Not what you see from the front, but it's
right,
on the register.
Right, right. And in this case, it's difficult for the public to see it, but that's not one of the criteria. So I wasn't worried about that. It's just the size and how closely you would adhere to the national standards on that. So I will let it know. Thank you.
Thank you.
We got our own standards.
Exactly. All right. Should we talk about the intangible? Oh, no? Okay.
Yeah, Commissioners, I had a walk-on as well. There's about 10 minutes here. I'm going to pass this around. The Sotero Smith House on the local registry. They want to put a new sign in. Sandy Wozniak, sign expert, caught this one. Their design. I dug up the old nomination and found that this sign is quite significant. And the new sign, I'm sure you'll have opinions on. But this is from 1999.
Oh.
A certificate of appropriateness for the current sign. Go to, I don't know that these have page numbers, but there was testimony at that hearing where Doris Hale testified that the Filipino Golden Agers built and placed the sign, complete with a time capsule in it.
So the new sign is going to incorporate the elements of the old sign? Is that what I'm seeing?
Well, I think that's a non-starter now that I've found the significance of this old sign. I would love the commission's feedback, but if this was built by a Filipino group has a time capsule in it, it seems like that would probably need to remain on the site.
Is this something you need a decision on tonight? Or?
No. I just got a lot of this information today, so I just wanted to get back to this gentleman with some initial feedback this week, and then I would imagine they'll need to come in for a certificate of appropriateness for a sign in a different location, is my thought at this time. But
I think at the very minimum, the sign needs to actually reflect the size of what they're proposing, because if you look at the size of the plaque in the existing and then the size of the plaque in the new one, and then how they've – if the plaque is going to be that big relative to the sign, then that sign's going to be a lot bigger than that. So if nothing else, they need to bring us some accurate information.
Scaled.
Or could it be a different sign, like leave the original and have a different sign? So
that's what I was thinking would be the most appropriate, is leave that sign. It seems like there's a lot of history on that sign. That's the existing sign got a C of A.
So is it the reason is because the existing sign's in the exact location that they want to put a new sign? Is that what's happening here? I'm just trying to understand.
I don't know if that's the thought or if that's where they think it's going to be the most visible.
So you sound like you'd come back at some point with the certificate of appropriateness request?
Yes.
Okay. One just really quick suggestion, I guess, would be maybe they should just hang a sign from this, you know, from the building rather than.
I think there's one, or there's one at least in this picture for a business there now, kind of from the. On the porch, if you can see that, the tiny one on the front.
Oh,
geez. Well, there'd be two issues. One, taking out this sign,
whether or not
it has significance in and of itself. And then two, introducing a new sign, which may or may not be appropriate for this building because of size and style. Okay.
Well, yeah, so looking at that picture, I'd suggest why don't they just hang another sign instead of taking out. But, okay, yeah, if you're going to bring it back in March, maybe, with.
I don't know if they'll be ready, but I'll let them know they need to come back.
Okay. I would say if if the time capsule in the sign is a contributing feature in the way the nominations for the register listings were written, then obviously that's an issue. If there's a time capsule or there's some history behind the creation of the sign, then we could say that that's significant to the property, whether or not it was listed.
They have acquired significance over time.
Right, right. And then, but then in terms of putting another sign up, it's not in the heritage overlay, therefore I'm not really sure we have a say in just sticking a sign in the ground, do we?
Well, that, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, that's part of the reason I wanted to, some discussion, because we did have the Jorge's discussion a few months back, where I thought that was clearly needed a C of A, but there was some discussion that maybe they didn't. So for a new sign, I would read it that they do need a certificate of appropriateness because they're altering something that's on the local register.
Yeah, I think we just need more information on that.
Sure. Yeah.
Original sign is what I'm hearing. Understanding how that made it as part of the original nomination and on the registry, right?
So, okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. All right. Next item. Okay. So the next item is actually, we're bringing it up tonight more to, as you can see, it's a subcommittee to be formed in the summer because we do have a lot of work in the next couple months for our commission, and we just don't want to lose this idea. And so the idea is for kind of the intangible cultural heritage. We've talked about it a little bit. And kind of these bullet points are to capture kind of what the work of this committee would be doing. But just we, right at the beginning of, you know, Robert and our term on this commission, the mobile app was part of our, what we created and launched. And so we haven't really, as a group, we haven't sat down and just audited it. Since then, we haven't looked at it, what can be improved, what's working, what's not working. We haven't had that discussion at all. And so this is part of that discussion and whether or not we can add some more elements to it, including the intangible cultural heritage of our area. So that's what this committee would be doing. So you kind of have two roles, two jobs if you wanted to be part of this group. I'm not asking for volunteers tonight, but just start thinking if this is something you might be interested in. The hope would be that it could be something that could be carried on when we finish. We have our demolition committee. Hopefully when that work starts to, I'm going to kind of talk about the two actually together at this moment, because the demolition committee, as I understand, we've been doing a lot of work, a lot of research, gathering information to bring back to this committee that I think we'll have something really ready for us all to discuss fully in March. And I also expect that in March the role of that committee is going to change from the research and gathering and proposal committee to one where we have some action items that we want to move forward to. So we probably will have some, be asking for some other members to join us and move forward with that action item of implementation. So the hope would be then that we could also then start up the intangible cultural heritage committee, along with that auditing of our current mobile app kind of work at that time. So, any thoughts on just the idea of kind of planning ahead here on our upcoming months?
So this would be just identifying things like, at this spot on the banks of the Columbia River, Meriwether Lewis met with. Identifying those types of things.
I mean, for cultural landscape, you know, I could see the Vancouver Lake River area being something that would kind of fit that profile. You know, for the intangible cultural heritage, you know, you're talking more about cultural practices and that kind of thing. So, Wapato gathering, salmon fishing.
Right.
You know, those kinds of cultural traditions. And I think the tricky thing is with a map-based app, those don't translate necessarily because it's like, oh, they weren't just people weren't just fishing here, and, you know, I mean, the Columbia River could be argued to be a cultural landscape, you know, I mean, so, the whole thing with intangible heritage is that it's kind of squishy, and when you're dealing with GIS and very pinpoint data kind of stuff, it may not translate, but I think that's an, you know, fascinating topic for the subcommittee to kind of explore and how to represent that kind of heritage that isn't something you can just see.
Well, if you had a place that is a sandwich, for instance, it could be an example of that intangible, not the only one.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon and I were talking about this, too, and it's a lot inspired, too, about the last conference we went to where they were talking about this as an item to really add to our program. And the way they did their maps, you could have layers. You could really start showing that we have all these historical layers that are underneath the white settlement of this area and really start bringing in a more balanced look at our Native American impact as well. And maybe it is just, more like, I want to say blobs, but that's not, but, you know, you could just show areas and colors overlaid to really represent all of these places without doing pinpoints. But it could be really powerful to see that, too, to say, wow, this area was a village site. This whole area was fishing. This whole area was hunting or whatever, you know. I mean, there's tons of other things to bring forward, but you could just paint that, too, on a map, I think.
And I think the other advantage of doing it that way is that you can represent things that you might normally represent with an archaeological site that you don't want to identify, you know, and so that you can still capture that information. I think this is a great idea. I think part of this audit should also be to identify what the other organizations in the county are doing, because I know the Historic Trust has not quite the same thing, but there's some similarities, and the Clark County Museum has an effort that is, again, not the same, but it's similar. And if there might be an opportunity to collaborate more on those efforts to bring them together.
Can I just add to that? So your historic promotion grant to the North Clark Historic Museum was to build these display cases for their Native Americans. They could bring it out of the basement. They just did that. Mm-hmm. And then you also this year, through the historic promotion grant, you funded the name wrong, the Ridgefield of Wildlife, the Friends of the Ridgefield. Mm-hmm. Wildlife Refuge. They're also having that longhouse and that whole interpretive. I mean, so you're already funding a lot of this, but maybe just do an audit to see who's got what materials. And Sarah and I talked this morning about maybe this committee, a subcommittee, could be doing some more relationship building with the tribes. I know some of you do that professionally, but as a commission, we haven't really done that. Build the relationships first and then see how do they want to be represented, because our website is focusing on the Euro-American built environment, not even really storytelling at all. So how could we work with them to get that narrative in our website?
So it could be more work than, you know, than you have time to but just to have a group to initially start that work and take a look at the, okay, there's already definitely some interest. That's why that's on here is more like we're not going to tackle it right away, but it'll be the next thing that we tackle. Do we see head nods about that? Okay. Good. Yay. All right. And then old business and updates is the demolition subcommittee. And like I mentioned, we're still we have some great things that we've been working on, but we will come back in March and hopefully have plan, have some, just like I said, we've put out a lot of emails to different groups, and Alex has been doing a ton of research, but I think we should be ready in March to really give a full report and get feedback and move forward. Is that right?
Yeah. I think the challenge we're having is finding a good model, a comparable model out there that so many of the demolition reviews are waiting periods for preservation and looking at options to preserve and preserved, basically. And what we're really looking for more is a documentation of the property. So it's tough to find code that's already written that we can use as an example. And obviously writing code from scratch is tricky, and you know, you need people buying in on it and everything else. So, you know, I think we're still at the data gathering phase, but should we talk about the, so you know, we were offered a grant from DAP. After reaching out to DAP, they have $5,000 of grant money that they are willing to put towards this effort, and we had a meeting. Sarah and I and staff had a meeting a couple weeks ago to discuss how could we use this money, and we settled on looking for a consultant to help us put together, looking for options and eventually putting together something that we can take to the jurisdictions, whether it's a brochure or a PowerPoint presentation or whatever it is, to first identify the problem and then go through possible scenarios for coming up to a solution, whether it's and you know, I talked to DAP about it, Kim Gant, and she said, well, you know, the first thing you should do is start at the micro level and just talk to the permitting department. And if they're willing to just do it and add something to the form, why, that would just be the easiest thing going. And but, you know, that comes with problems because, you know, you can't just require somebody to do something without it being in code somewhere. So,
right. You know, there's code, and there's just being able to really explain how we would like the information provided to us, and there's all those different steps. So
yeah, and Sarah's reached out to GIS to ask them to compile some information, and they thought it was going to be really easy, so easy that they just said, well, yeah, how do you want it, in tabular form or this form? Or what? And then they came back and said, actually, it's going to take us a little, these queries are going to take a little more time, you know, give us 2 weeks.
We'd hope to have it by this meeting, but we don't. So, yeah.
They gave us a big table, but it didn't quite translate to what we were hoping. I wrote to the National Trust for Historic Preservation and got some feedback, I think basically from the person who answers their email queries. And she had some good ideas, you know, using Denver and Philadelphia and some, a couple other cities. And but again, you know, a lot of those are for heritage register listed properties and how to preserve them in the face of demolition, not necessarily how to record any old structure that's over 50 years old before it's demolished. So one thing I did was meet with a contractor who I was chatting with over Christmas, who he's in the business of either buying historic properties himself or working on historic properties, most of them in the Haug neighborhood. And so this house on 21st and Franklin, he told me, you know, he's working with the buyer and they're going to demolish it because it's just not worth saving. So I asked him if I could document it, and I think it would be a good example to just show county, you know, if it ends up being that, who's going to do this documentation? And, you know, we kept coming back to, it seems like county would be the most, county staff would be the most logical. Asking the applicant to do the documentation would result in them having to, every applicant having to start their own wizard account and then documenting the structure themselves, which would have, you know, pretty inconsistent entries on the Washington Historic Property Inventory. Whereas if county staff could get it down to a pretty turnkey process, that, you know, so I'm gathering, using this house to maybe show Jackie and Sharon just, you know, what all would be involved in documenting a house at the reconnaissance level. You know, 4 photos and a brief architectural description with maybe that scanned building card, and that's it. You know, how long that would take.
So yeah, we're still getting some ideas.
And we got our idea for the Cultural Resource Leadership Summit up at the Suquamish Indian Reservation. And it's held every year, and, you know, tribal folks come, historic preservationists come, planners come. I've been to it a couple of times, and it's pretty good. Anyway, they really liked our idea, and they've contacted us with a few other people who expressed interest in this topic, including one archaeologist I know who works for, he's the WashDOT archaeologist, so a smart guy, and so I'm interested to see what. And it sounds like it's going to be more of like a symposium, so maybe some brainstorming will occur there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, even though, like I said, we've had some roadblocks, I do feel like we're coming to a point where we're going to have some good information to bring back and a plan to move forward. All right, so we do have others in the audience. Would you like to open this up to the public comment period? Okay. Could you come up to the mic?
Is on? Good evening, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Juliet McGraw. I am the Community and Cultural Education Director for the Friends of the Richfield National Wildlife Refuge and a recent recipient of a grant from your organization. So I was stopping by twofold today. One, to say thank you. We've started on the project. As you noted from probably our application is that collections is used broadly, is that no one has ever really organized them. My background is in archaeology and ethnobotany. As the director of the program, and so this was something that when I came on, I realized that if we were ever going to make some of this information publicly accessible, it needed to be digitized and raised to academic standards. So thank you to all of you, because that's something that our organization didn't have the ability to do before the grant, so thank you. Also, I know that there are two positions that are open, and I'm considering applying. And one of the reasons why I came by this meeting was because of the intangible things. That's what I do as part of my job, are the intangible parts of the landscape. We interpret the Capitol Village site. We work with the Chinook Indian Nation with the Plank House. We're undergoing an oak release to restore an ancestral habitat that was used by the villagers of people. So that's something that I think that at least to have a good conversation with the Friends, we could offer up some resources. Locations for things for the commission to look at. I basically kind of manage that part of the CARDI unit. I'm the interface with that. We have really deep tribal relationships with the Chinook Indian Nation, the Kalitz Indian Tribe, and several pan-Indian groups in the region, including we give support to the Clark College Powwow. We work very closely with the Clark County Historical Museum. So I kind of came on that because I wanted to know more information about what that seems like a really exciting project and where you saw that going, because that's what I'm most curious about, what you're working on currently.
We haven't really started working on it yet.
So, okay. But that was all. I just wanted to say thank you in person and then just express my interest in just the body as a whole.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Oh, no. you when you work with things like this, you have to have the longer A in mind.
That was a great grant application, too. I really enjoyed your project, and so I'm interested in seeing how that turns out.
Thank you. I'm really excited to work on it. Thankfully, the shutdown's over, and we can get moving on it now. Well, thank you.
Oh, yeah, and I do have photos of that house, if anyone's interested, the house that's going to be demolished any day now. I think 1913. Yeah. Kind of arts and craftsy. It's, yeah. I mean, if you live, do you live in the downtown? Oh, because it's pretty recognizable. I mean, it's.
What are you working on over there, Jenna? Are you putting a picture up?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Oh, so we do have a picture to look at. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like 20 of them. If
you're I thought you were passing it around, so I wasn't sure.
No, it's digital.
Very high tech. I just thought you were leaving. We're not leaving. We're going to look at every one of these pictures.
Oh, yeah. and there's this elevation. The inside's already
pretty gutted. So that's 20. That's 21st in front of us. So it's it has a tunnel from Franklin Street into the basement. Separate. The garage is built into the hill. No, it's just that the house is not worth saving.
In his opinion, or in fact?
Yeah, I'm not the architect or the contractor. 1913.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it's not worth saving.
It's like the original satellite.
Yeah. No, but the windows are original.
Yeah.
Maybe I could salvage those and replace my vinyl windows with them.
You should. Well, you know, my house is 21, and it has those same hangar. And, you know, people come to my house and like, oh, you should get these vinyl windows. They'll pay for them. So I'm like, they're not more energy efficient than these wood, than these storm windows that I've got. And that's the roof of the garage that's built into the hill on Franklin. Clearly, the chimney's been replaced. Yeah, and it's got an entrance on the, there's the front entrance on the north side, and then there's an entrance on the west side that you see there. That's the west entrance.
I'm sorry, did you just buy this and want to demolish it?
So he's working for the person who owns it. So in some cases, there's the entrance to the tunnel that goes into the basement. He called it the coal delivery tunnel. Possible. I mean, it's the right era for coal heat.
I do a lot of coal heat around here, though.
It's hard to see a lot of reasons why this can't be seen.
No, they want a different house.
So anyway, that's the house, and you know. But if we, you know, if nobody did anything, they would demolish it, and nobody would ever remember this house. So, you know, it's kind of brings to light like the whole point I'm trying to make that, you know, there's just even GIS, which has, you know, the scanned building card and the year, it just goes away once it's demolished. And so
it doesn't go into
but it goes away from public view.
Right.
And
okay.
So
just a quick update on that 1889, the farmhouse, the Agard. You know, the woman bought the property and doesn't want that house. The neighbor grew up in that house, and their family lived there for 30 years. So they're trying to move it, but they have some boundary line and some legal lot determinations to get through, which they'll know in a month or so.
Wow.
So, and it costs them about $40,000 to move to the neighbor. So it'll stay in the area.
That's amazing.
Agard. A-A-G. Ogard. Ogard, maybe?
Mm-hmm. All right. If
they're not going to be demolished, because
that's amazing.
Table if they don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. We've done a lot of work tonight, you guys. Do we have a motion to adjourn? Oh wait. Oh, more public comments. Sorry. I guess I should have realized you're still hanging with us. Sorry, Holly.
Holly Chamberlain, currently representing the Washington Trust for Historic Preservation. Just one quick point, that house should already be documented in Wizard. A lot of the properties, because Hauk is a state historic district, are in there. I don't know if you've had a chance.
Parts of Hauk are really well documented.
Yeah, it's spotty. Yeah, just throwing that out. It's like, oh, my God. I just wanted to talk briefly about advocacy for the Heritage Capital Projects. I've got plenty of postcards here. Everybody can take as many as they would like and share them. The good news is that the governor's budget has money for about two-thirds of the projects, and I don't think there's actually going to be too much problem having that money stay in the budget. However, there's all these ones that are ranked lower that are currently not part of the budget, and As a group of applicants, we advocate for all of the projects to be funded up to the full amount that's allowed, which is about $10 million. So this is for the coming biennium. And any comments that you would like to make to your state legislators would be very, very welcome. Attendance at the Heritage Caucus, which happens every Wednesday during the session starting at 7 a.m. in Olympia, can go and listen in on deliberations there. But just reinforcing with your legislators is very, very important so that they hear from a wide variety of people that we want all of the projects funded because it's good for the entire state if there's more heritage happening more of the time. There's some other bills coming up that are pretty interesting in terms of considerations about unreinforced masonry structures and potential funding for seismic remedies, but it's, as you know, it's a huge, huge problem all over the state, and one or two bills is not going to necessarily solve that, but you might want to kind of track those and pay attention and advocate for older structures as much as possible. I think the best possible outcome probably will be that maybe buildings that are on the National Register might get a few more points in terms of any grant dollars available for their seismic reinforcing. There's a group of people who'd like to take Marcus Whitman's statue out of Statuary Hall in D.C., and if that should occur, there will be a statewide process to get suggestions of who should best represent our state if he's removed, so that's coming up. But let me know if this is not enough postcards. I'd be happy to get more and spread them out to friends, colleagues, especially folks that you think might actually get in touch with their legislatures. All the voices are important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you take some to the museum?
Not yet. I just got these. Oh, and just quickly, they are going out to all the state legislators, of course, but also city council members, et cetera, but it's still, the general public has very powerful voices if you just speak up, and, friends who have interest in saving historic properties anywhere, it'd be great to throw one in an envelope and send it to them or give them the website. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen.
All right. Now, do we have, I just feel bad. Close the meeting, you didn't get to talk. Okay. All right. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
All right. It's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
No opposed.